Welcome back to the new year, 2026, isn't it? In our first class of the year. So thank you for being here and engaging in these teachings and learnings. Okay, so we'll begin as we normally do, by taking refuge and generating a mind of enlightenment. We'll say a few prayers together and then we'll begin the actual class. And during the class, we're time for a break. You can ask questions and there's also time to meditate. So let's start by taking refuge and generating the mind of enlightenment. So please just get comfortable in the seat. You'll drop your shoulders and check your posture. Let the body breathe normally and naturally. And then imagine in the space in front of you appears the Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha. And this body is made of golden light, and he is surrounded by your own spiritual teacher, other teachers of the lineage, Buddhas, meditational deities, and other enlightened beings. And surrounding you are all sentient beings. Sitting beside you on your left is your mother, beside you on the right is your father, behind you is your family and closest friends, and in front of you are people you've had difficulties with and misunderstandings. And everyone is looking towards the Buddha. And what we have in common with one another is a wish to avoid suffering. We all equally wish to be happy, yet we all equally lack genuine happiness. Now, the causes for genuine happiness can be cultivated and brought to completion by us. But to do that, we need to rid ourselves of the causes of suffering, and these can be eliminated. To dispel the causes of suffering, we need to let go of the mind of attachment and ignorance. Possible to do this because attachment does not truly exist. It exists dependent upon causes and conditions. Anything that is produced dependent upon causes and conditions can be altered, can be changed. So we can change ourselves from people who are experiencing different forms of suffering to people who do not experience that suffering anymore. So how do we know this? Well, because it's already been accomplished by the person we call Shakyamuni Buddha, where many other people can have confidence also in having done this, because there are many teachers that we can meet who have engaged in the practices to separate themselves from suffering and its causes. So what we want to do is to take refuge in the original teacher, the Buddha, and his spiritual entourage, which includes our own teachers. We want to do this for the benefit of all sentient beings. So think to yourself that you want to put an end to the causes of suffering for yourself and all beings, and to develop all the causes and the merit to produce a genuine happiness. And to affirm this, please join me in reciting the prayer that's up on the screen. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. So in response to this prayer of ours, imagine that from the heart of each enlightened being above you, lights and nectar stream down. These lights and nectar remove the causes of suffering and suffering itself. And the body, speech and mind return to its original nature, free from the causes of suffering, having the potential to awaken. So now recollect the four thoughts of compassion, love, joy, and equanimity, and decide to establish these within yourself and others. To affirm that, again, just join me in reciting this prayer. May all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the bias of attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. In response to this prayer of ours, again, lots of nectar spring from the heart of each enlightened being above you. They wash over you and over all the beings surrounding you. The opposites of these four thoughts are removed, and the mind now abides within these four thoughts of immeasurable love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. Then recollect the field of merit, the Buddha and his spiritual compatriots. Prepare yourself to purify the mind, accumulate merit, and increase the merit by engaging with the seven-minute prayer. Again, please join me in saying, reverently I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since the beginning of time and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own and others' merits to the great enlightenment. I think to stop ourselves from clinging to the merit we've created, to ourselves, to our thoughts, the idea of a world system, that we're going to make a mandala offering. So here I think that your body, speech, and mind, and merit, the world itself is utterly transformed into this offering you're going to make. And so this is the offering. We say, this ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offering. May all living beings enjoy its pure land. Our offering has been released. The Buddha accepts it with delight and he smiles at us. And we look up into the eyes of the Buddha. We feel acceptance and at ease. The emanation of the Buddha leaves his heart. Moves through space and comes to the bottom of the crown of your head, facing in the same direction you are. The emanation descends to the level of your heart and expands, filling your body and mind with lights and nectars. And then the lights and nectars pour out through the pores of your skin, filling the 10 directions of space, establishing every being within space to now be within the enlightened state. And to illustrate this, we recite this mantra just three times. Tayata Om Mahamaya Sa. Tayata Om Mahamaya Sa. Tayata Om Mahamaya Sa. In this level of breath, we will recite a few more times. As you're reciting the prayer, you acknowledge that you have control over the suffering of the lower realms and the mistaken idea of an I existing independent of the body and mind. You have great mastery over all suffering and self-cherishing thoughts, and over the subtle illusions in dualistic thinking. And the last word, Saha, is a wish for all the blessings and realizations to receive by you, stabilized in your mind. And then just breathing in through your nostrils, just exhale through your mouth. And in your own time, just allow your eyes to open. Readjust your posture in the seat if you like, and make yourself quite comfortable. Okay, so it's new year, new course, and it's a good one because it's just about starting a meditation practice. Now our course outline begins, we've got 8 classes, week by week, and in it we're going to be talking about this daily meditation, how we can engage in one, with advice primarily given by Lama Sopa Rinpoche. And over these 8 weeks, we're focusing on a phenomenon called a speech blessing. So we'll talk about this today, and then every week after this, we'll do it here. It doesn't take very long. And finally, we'll look at some simple meditations we can do. So it's as if we're sort of complete beginners. And if you were thought we were a complete beginner, you're going to engage in meditation. Hopefully, this will help you. Okay, so what are we looking at those topics? What meditation is, how we can apply this every day, and again, this purifying the speech idea. Now, the books I've relied upon, primarily the material we're actually relying on, is this first book here called The Method to Transform a Suffering Life into Happiness, Including Enlightenment. Woo-hoo. It's a really short thing, lots of advice in it. So it's that one, and the third one here called Shakyamuni. So most of the stuff is based around these two things, these two practices, and I'll be drawing in material from elsewhere just to sort of support the explanation. So let's begin with what meditation is. So I think last year, I know many of you were here, so does anybody remember what meditation is? What's its, what can I say, function? What are we trying to do when we meditate? So we're trying to familiarize the mind with positive objects, be staying present, which really helps to do this. Yeah. Okay, that's excellent. Yeah. Okay. So so you can see there's quite a few explanations of what meditation is and its sort of function. But basically, it's this process of becoming familiar with a virtuous object. Now, these objects of virtue are primarily thoughts, particular ways of thinking. So an object of virtue would be loving kindness. And so you meditate, you become familiar with loving kindness. So we have to find out what loving kindness is and then become familiar with it. And it's, that process is called meditation. So we do this all the time, but we wouldn't call it meditation, actually. So I mean, you have to think, like for myself, so I have a bit of a thing about clothes. I like clothing, I like shoes, that sort of stuff. Right? And so I'm always on the, you know, my eye just seems to catch it. And when I see it, I make myself familiar with it. And then I walk out, and often what I'll do is I'll look at the price, feel the material, I'll go and put it on, and then I'll put it back, and I'll walk out of the shop. I could myself have a day or two to think about this. So if I go to buy it, you know what happens in that day or two? Yeah, that's right, I sell it to myself. It's like I familiarise myself with what I think all the good qualities of the shoes and trousers and shirt, right? I make it as such a good price. Well, it's made by this person. Yeah, it really looks good on me. So I become familiar with it, then I go and get it. Now it's my shirt, my shoes. It's a similar thing here. You can do this with bad qualities of the mind. So if you ever thought about something bad that's happened to you, then you look at the person and you think about what they've done to you. You're familiarizing your mind with that person's behavior. And what does it do to you? If it's bad behavior, it makes you upset, doesn't it? Right? If it's good behavior, what happens then? It makes you happy, right? You like them. You'd like to see them again. So it's just that process of becoming familiar with, like, and here's virtuous objects, because we've got enough suffering going on in our lives, right? So we want to focus the mind on those objects that will actually invigorate the mind. Make yourself feel happy, you know, competent, that you can handle the problems that your mind throws up to yourself. Anybody here had sports training, before? Because if you have, you know, you have a teacher, right? And what they often do is they look at what you do and they find your faults. And I'll often say, try not to do this. I'll tell you why. And they'll give you a new behavior to do. Right? So, and this new behavior is meant to make you better at what you're trying to do. And when they see the bad behavior, they're trying to get you to decrease it, right? Because it's going to hinder your development. So meditation is basically that. You've got to work out what hinders your spiritual development, what drives you crazy, and stop doing it. And replace it with something else and become very familiar with the new thing you replace it with. So it becomes sort of natural to you. And it becomes effortless. So I'll give you another quick example. So I come from a little difficult family, and what came out of all this difficulties is our whole family just discarded my father. I just walked away from him, basically. It's too difficult. So no one goes home. Right? And what stops us going home? We just think about what he did to us. We become familiar with his behaviors towards us, and we don't know we're not going there. Anyway, a couple of things happened to me. I thought this was a bit strange and a bit funny that we're all looking at our parents in this way. And I thought, no, there's got to be something good he did. There must be. You know, I did a lot of thinking and found one thing. And then when I found one thing, then I found another thing. And then I found another thing. And I just started, I thought, I'm going to make myself familiar with this. Because I don't want to go every time I think of my dad or see him, I don't like him. And that's what I've been doing, right? Sort of familiarizing myself with the behaviors and characters of my dad that I don't like. What has come out of that is a great aversion towards him, a dislike. So if you don't want to go through life like that, you have to sort of look at this and go, sure, this is not working for me. I have to sort of stop. I need to replace these ideas. So meditation is like finding the wrong idea, putting it down, get the correct idea or an idea that's useful to you, become familiar with that. So that when you engage with this object next time, you have a different way of doing it. The function of meditation is like to bring this mind that would naturally look at the faults of my dad and become upset with them. Right? So then now I've got anger and resentment controlling my mind. And anybody's had that happen, you know how uncomfortable that is, don't you? I mean, it's not a pleasant thing you want to go around all day with, is it? And so for most of us, what we want to do is like my sister goes, Dad has to change. I want my dad to say sorry to me for what he did. I go, geez, I didn't want to say, well, good luck with that. But good luck with that. You know, it's like, you don't know that could ever happen. So if they're not going to change, then we can. It'll make the difference. They don't have to change. They can stay exactly the same, in fact. But if we change our lives, we have a completely different relationship with them. Yeah, so we wanted to do this. I remember His Holiness saying, I'd read that somebody said, all problems come from the mind, but so does happiness. You know? And then he said, no, we need to be more careful. He said, all problems come from an undisciplined mind. And all the happiness comes from you being able to discipline your mind. So we have to play a part in this. We can't just say our mind, think that our mind will do it for us, right? Like one day I'll be better. Yeah. In fact, later on, was one of this, one of the things I did was, I recognized my part of driving my dad crazy. So, of course, I wrote to him and apologized. And I got this great letter back where he said to me, I could not stop myself from being angry. Like, I knew it wasn't working, but I knew it hurt you and everyone else, but I couldn't stop myself. And I was just like, of course you couldn't stop yourself. You have no method. You have no method. Here, we can learn about method, eh? We can apply the method and then see if it works. If it works, we keep it. Like I said, my dad had no method whatsoever. He's just it was like, you try and not do it. It's not really powerful enough. It might be for some people, but most people, you know, you don't want to do it, but you find yourself doing it. And this is because of the habits of doing it again and again before. Yeah, so this is the idea to tame the mind. We want to tame the mind, but then for what? Like, for what's the purpose? So there are many purposes you can come to train your mind. So for instance, one of the Dharma teachers that comes here, he wanted to tame his mind so he could become the very best jazz pianist there was. He could beat everybody else. Right? And that's what you could do. You could do that. For me, when I was much younger, I was a very good pool player, but it was because I trained my mind to, you know, just concentrate, you learn to concentrate, train the mind, and you become what you want to. But the thing is, how useful is that goal? Now, if you're training the mind to accomplish something, then I was like, and how useful is that? What's it to actually do? So, the motivations for meditating are, well, I'll put it this way. You can start up with this life. You know, like for me, I want to be a great pool player, or I want to be a great musician, or I just want to have a good relationship with my dad. Now, these are all motivations, reasons for meditating, aren't they? But you'll see they're all concerned with this life. And that's what you need to check. When I'm practicing, when I'm meditating, what's it for? Has it got something, it must have something to do with me, of course. And then, so here, this view here is about, so what the view of most people, the vast majority of ordinary people, is what matters to them is what goes on in this life. You know, it matters to us, doesn't it? What we do in this life, it matters. So many people go, I'm just going to meditate to be a better person, a happier person. And that's to do with this life. So in other words, but to remove difficulties and be happy. So that's a valid goal of meditation. But it's not a Buddhist goal of meditation. It's a valid goal for ordinary people who have never been introduced to a spiritual path.
I just had a thought.
Yep.
I don't know if I'm close.
It's okay, sure.
We focus on ourselves, but then we can focus on others.
That's right.
And doing something for others.
Yeah. So you see all those, if you look at, often as you ask who the most important person is, truthfully, it's got to be. But I'm more important than someone else. So it's me and my life. That's our, we start there. And as we are introduced to more teachings and think about and so forth, we'll see, gee, my life finishes. Is there anything else after death? Because if there's not, no problem about doing everything with this life, is there? What if this life sort of finishes with death, but something else happens that is some sort of continuity? You know, like it might be a bit of a, when we go to sleep, is it? Like we close our eyes and this world just falls away. Then we might end up in a dream world, something like that, right? So consciousness is still going, isn't it? It's not aware of this here, but it's aware of something else. Right? And then the dream stops. Right? And now it's just like darkness, deep sleep, deep rest. Well, we're still aware in there. Like if somebody came along and just grabbed our toe, right, we'd wake up really quickly, didn't we? Right? But so the awareness is still there. It's just a different type of awareness. And then later on, we wake up. And it's like, it's not the same world that we've woken up into. Because everything changes from moment to moment to moment. So it's a new world that just looks the same. We just go through the process. We do it day after day. But death is sort of like that. Death is just like going to sleep. And then you think that, you know, you might think, well, that's the end. But then suddenly you might find yourself dreaming. And this is like this dreaming thing, this bravado. And then when you wake up again, you're going to wake up again with your life with a different body. This was sort of presentation. So then I think, shit, this meditation I've done was very valuable in my life, but was it useful to get me through this other stage, like the dying? Is it helpful then? You know, and then after that, so, gee, okay, from what I understand now, consciousness doesn't go right out of the picture altogether. What was I able to do, like, in this life that was valuable to me to get me through the dying and the rebirth? So if you think about it like that, then you're going to be looking for benefits that are greater in this life. You're still going to want to remove difficulties in this life, of course. You still want to be happy in this life. That's nothing wrong with that. But you're going to need a bit more. You're going to have to look at future lives. Like, what am I doing in this life that will be useful for me in another life? So you might meditate to do that. Like, go, okay. But what I understand of Buddhist teachings is this life as an ordinary person, you can get yourself liberated and you can become enlightened. Or you can find yourself in some other unsought place. This is on the bad side, right? We want to do something that's useful in our future lives, in our meditating. So what I take from this is, you know, like, so you find that friendliness is very useful in this life? You go, well, then I need to be friendly in future lives too. If I find it really, wow, being patient is so useful in this life, wouldn't it be useful in other lives too as a human? Yeah, okay. So look at that, right? Find those good qualities. Okay, I want to develop these for this life and future lives. So we've got that, they're called, the future lives we're aiming at as human beings, again, with leisure and opportunity or some higher rebirth. Then, like I said, there's liberation. You know, you could be meditating, you could go, yeah, well, but I really think about it. You know, I mean, I meet all these difficulties in this life, and I'm going to say, yeah, I want to do it again. I'll meet them all again and do it again and again and again. You know, you might get a little bit fed up with that, eh? Why not just stop the whole process altogether? So if you say that, you go, they've done maybe for liberation. I don't want to be reborn with all these difficulties. No matter how good it is, I do not want that to take place anymore under the control of disturbing emotions. So that's why I meditate here. And you're going to find that everything that you did before for high status, living difficulties, is still doing the same thing. What's changed is your motivation. But really, the motivation is the most important thing. Why? Because the motivation is karma. So you motivate something, there's an effect that's going to follow. Whatever, if you have reasons for doing something, something else is going to follow, a consequence. That's why it's really important to make sure your motivation is the best you can manage. And finally, of course, there's this Buddhahood or complete enlightenment. You know, we're aiming to achieve two purposes, our own and everyone else. As you pointed out at the back, right? We start with ourselves, then you sort of, you catch on. Oh my God, the way I live is interdependent. My happiness is dependent upon other people. You know, like when all my clothing has been made by other people. What's clothing I like? None of it I've made myself. So everything that I like being dressed in has been come about from other people. Yeah, you find in every bit of food you've eaten comes from other people and sentient beings. So it's just this way of saying, like, wow, this is, I find it very difficult dealing with suffering, so does everybody else. There's really little difference between us. So, you know, I work for myself, I should also work for others. Others are also important to me. So you move away from the sense of, selfishness and indifference towards others, and then moving outwards and bringing the mind of enlightenment and greater caring for others. In fact, love is emphasis a lot. This is a great deal about motivation. And so I took one of his things that he said and just put it up here. It's a very short one. But he says this: the purpose of having this precious human body is not simply to achieve happiness for yourself, but to eliminate the suffering of all other beings and bring them happiness. This is the purpose of your life. And that's really condensed. Actually, when you go through the book, it goes on to page some pages trying to let you know, right? You want to have a good purpose for doing Dharma, take this one. Do it not just for yourself, but for everybody else. And go for the best. Go for top shelf. You know? So, Tetsu Rinpoche, Nishi Tashi Seri, one time asked us, Buddhahood, enlightenment, what is that? You know, and then he's looking around, tell me, what is it? And everybody, of course, goes very quiet and said nothing. You know? And he's going like, perfect compassion, perfect wisdom, and the perfect ability to help others. That's what we need. That's what Buddha is. So I really like that. So just bring it down to ordinary English language that we can understand and go, yeah, I'd love to have a ability to feel kind and warm to everybody. That nobody distressed me in any way. I was really wise. But when I did, and I was really skillful, I was really good at doing what was useful for other people. So for me, I look at myself, I'd love to be a person like that. You know, when you want to call them a Buddha or a human being or whatever. Now, like, you know, you see, there are people like this in the world, aren't there? I mean, Lama Zopa was here with us for a little while. His Holiness is still with us. There are many great spiritual practitioners, and this is what they're like. You come to their company, you're affected by them. They, the simplest way, it's like they give off something. You feel something in their presence. They're not, just like if you're in a company with a really angry person, they give off something too, right? And you know how uncomfortable that is. Well, the good people do the same, but in a different way. Yeah, you know, you feel that, and you go, wow, I feel really, I don't know, comfortable, at ease. I don't feel anxious, so anxious. It would be nice to be that sort of person, don't you think? It would be like that.
Eddie, just going on motivation, before I was introduced to Tibetan Buddhism, and I looked after, then I looked back at my life and I realized actually I had spent a great deal of my life just kind of doing things, not really thinking about why I did it and just hoping for the best.
Yeah.
And whereas Tibetan Buddhism has kind of taught me to really think before I do something, why am I doing it? What benefit am I going to get? What match the cause of what I'm doing? So that's something,
yeah. It's a great question to ask yourself, why am I doing it? Why am I doing this? In fact, I had a conversation while on holiday with an author going through quite a lot of emotional distress through the breakup of his marriage. And so, you know, so I'm listening to him, and then I thought, I'll just ask him, why do you write? He didn't answer me. He went off in some other way, and then I asked him another question. I said, these are a bit confronting questions, really, I think. Maybe I was a little bit too forceful in what I was asking him. I said, mate, if you know why you're doing things, that can be very, very useful to you. And my way of looking is, I thought, yeah, I know why you're writing, but I want you to tell me. And I said, but he couldn't, because what I came up with, it's all about your ego. You want to be known as the writer. You know, you get all your feedback from the world as somebody important, somebody contributing, and that's basically what he does. Right? And you know, he's been married three times. This is the third divorce. This is why I was sort of asking, why do you write? Zippy set out to inform the world of great qualities or something good for people. The Akash has outer directives for others. Right? Good on you. You know, but when it's just for yourself or primarily for yourself, it gets a little tricky after a while. Yeah, so Lama's up to say, like I said, his big thing is body to the mind of enlightenment. And do everything you possibly can for others, you'll benefit anyway. You get what you want by working for others. Whereas if you just work for what you want, that's uncertain and usually problematic too. Now these trainings, like I said, they go through different stages. And if your aim is to free yourself from suffering and its causes, or anything higher than that, the next one, of course, is enlightenment, right? So we've got, if your goal is liberation or enlightenment, the way you do that is engaging in these three trainings. You start off with morality or ethics. That's the foundation. Then the next stage is to develop concentration, to concentrate the mind. And finally, you end up with what they call wisdom. These are called the three higher trainings, because these trainings, like ethics, concentration, and wisdom, are found in the world, right? Ordinary people do this, are ethical, can concentrate their mind and develop wisdom. But this is called higher training, because it's to get you out of cycling existence. It's to stop the process of being overwhelmed by suffering and its causes. Often you'll find with ordinary people, worldly people, many of them are ethical and can concentrate and have intelligence, aren't they? But again, like what's the purpose? You know, what can be happy in this world? And that's if you're not, spiritual people, well, that's valid enough, isn't it? You know? And they are happier if you're an ethical person who can concentrate the mind and have, you know, develop stable intelligence. It's very good for anyone, whether you're a spiritual person or not. But for those who want to transcend suffering altogether, this is the process. So again, what can I say? It is... it's hierarchy, as you can see, ethics is the foundation of bills, but it's also the ethics affects the concentration affects the ethics, the wisdom affects the concentration. So they're all interconnected, synergistic, I think they call it. Synergies cross over. Too bad. Okay, so what's interesting to you guys? What, is there, are there any questions you'd like to ask? Is there anything I've said what the controversial doesn't sit well with you? Can you just bring it up? Yes, the different goals of meditation. Yeah, the Mahayana view is to become enlightened. But there are other things. The major thing is to stop the cycle of being reborn under the control of disturbing emotions. That's the main goal of Buddhist practice. Right? It's called liberation. They want us to be able to stop, because you're taking rebirth under the control of disturbing emotions and karma. Because if you do, it happens again and again and again. Right? So the goal is, let's try to stop that. And of course, it's difficult. But so this way, you know, it's a lot of training. So once this life finishes, you can engage again. Because the same thing will happen again. You'll probably end up in a place like this, wondering about ourselves and who I am and how things exist and why am I suffering. I think so. Have I answered your question, Susie?
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, this is the major thing. Yeah.
Okay. ethics and morality, that's a huge topic.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
just to
yes.
say
Yes.
Have we covered that?
Oh,
no,
we haven't.
No,
that doesn't have to be like a complete course, because there's ethics for those who, from ordinary ethics, ethics for the ordinary person, ethics for the ordained, ethics for the person who wishes to liberate, ethics for the bodhisattva, ethics for the tantra. Big, massive. Yeah, so, yeah, but all of us can begin with these really simple ones, of those 10 non-virtuous behaviours and abandoning them. Let's all just decide, I'm never going to kill a human being. Never deliberately kill a human being. Right? And I'll do my best not to kill insects, animals, all that sort of thing. And there's a, quite often, that breaks it completely, but on the side, don't harm people. Don't hurt them. And don't hurt people and animals. Yeah, and also, it stops our guilt. You know, and you don't want to have, you're only trying to do this stuff and then things come up from 20 years ago or something, you know? Or perhaps, another little story, but so when I first began and started really maturing, you know, I came into it already with plenty of negative stuff on my mind stream. And, you know, the one that was always pressing was this way I'd behaved to this girl when I was at school. And I knew I'd done the wrong thing. And I was always there. You know, and then I found out about this death and rebirth stuff. I thought, Jesus, there's no way I want to die with that on my mind. No way. Same with the stuff with my father, right? It's like, no, I want to clear this up now, as soon as I can. And you can, and I did. You know, just sort of rang her up, apologized for what I'd done. And she's like, oh, let go of that. Now that's done. Like I said, I probably told the story before, you know, I actually hadn't done the thing I thought I'd done. I thought I did. But the guilt was there. That's the funny thing, you know, the guilt there is bad. So really, you know, like it hinders your progress. Like if I'd known about ethics and actually practice it, I wouldn't have said it in the first place. Yeah. That's the other thing. This is thing you'll find. If you're with somebody that you care about and they behave unethically, you want to stop them, not because they're bad people, but because what they've just done is going to hurt them. If you care about them, you don't want them to be hurt. That's why you want to encourage your friends to be ethical and yourself. You know? But you're going to hurt yourself. And most people that have been hurt, they hurt others. It's just a no-win situation. So it's, you know, like, yeah, ethics is the foundation here. And the thing that's always, we'll come to it, but ethics are empty of any intrinsic nature. This is the wisdom part. You have to, over time, bring it in, right, and mix them together. Because otherwise you get this, the way our language works, it reifies ideas. Right, so you get something like the idea like anger. You just say anger. Right? So it seems to exist on its own as a real thing and it has this type of quality and so forth, right? But it can't be. Like anger only exists if you have a human being. Without a human being, you can't have anger. But then you need something to make you angry. Then you have anger. So it's not anger doesn't just exist as a real thing on its own, but in fact, nothing does. But often this is how they appear to us, just through the use of our language and what they call the reifying mind. It just makes things look that way. But so we do get angry, but don't even think you're a bad person because you're angry. It's the mental state. That's the problem, not the person. The mental states make the people crazy. But that's the problem. They're not the people, the mental states. In fact, I always remember this in the Buddha scene. They said, I have never, ever seen a bad person. I've seen bad mental states. I know they exist, but bad people don't exist. So that's a great thing to hold on to. Right? For me, at least, there's often, at least for me, when I watch television or something, right, and you see the bad behaviors of people. I'm sure most of us blame the people. It's my go-to, isn't it? You think such and such about the person. The person has been under the control of this anger or delusion of some sort. They've done very bad things, isn't it? It's because of the affliction. Then you have the bad behavior. And we all know people have their behaviors, right? But, so this is what I mean by this idea of emptiness, right? That you cannot go, the person is, I mean, we use this, we say people are angry. But again, if you think about it, the people are angry. Do you think, can anybody be kind if people are angry? They're two opposite mental states, aren't they? So you can say, like, you know, they behave angry, they behave kindly, that's correct. They do. But the people themselves aren't kind, angry. It's all imputation, this use of language. Again, this will take ages to get through because even after a while, you still slip into it, right? People behave poorly, you think they're bad people. You keep trying to disengage from that way of thinking over time. Now, so one thing that I hope to take away from this is so meditation in this context of Buddhism is not about just relaxing and chilling out and getting a good night's sleep. You can do that with meditation, of course you can, but yeah, that's not the function of it. In fact, the one text I read of this person saying, if you meditate to relax, it's like having a great valuable diamond, but you use it to scratch your shopping list on the mirror. Because you can do so much more with it. You know, it's not just, like I said, to relax and chill out. You actually alter your mental states, change the way you do.
And I guess sometimes when you do meditation, won't always be relaxed, and so if you're expecting that outcome, and then when it doesn't happen, you kind of go, oh, you get a bit of a shock.
Yes, but it often takes you do it's best to be relaxed when you meditate, but don't use your whole session to relax. Like, I've often had the teachers say, why don't you just lie down and go to sleep? Yeah, it's a heck of a lot easier than meditating if you want to relax. Or, you know, something simple, or just lie down on the grass or something, and chill out, it's okay. Yeah, so meditation, Geshe often said sometimes, it's hard work. If you do that, you'll find out it's hard work. You can't do it too long, it's all this mental stuff going along. So, meditation is part of this process of becoming a what you call a Dharma person. Person of Dharma. So the question is, like, what is Dharma, right? Again, many different answers that can be given here. You want to find the ones that resonate for you. But when we talk about Dharma as a teaching, its function is to hold us back from suffering. That's its whole purpose, right? And if you practice in Dharma, it is yourself. So what am I doing here to hold myself back from suffering? How am I protecting the mind and myself from suffering? Because if I am, you're practicing Dharma. In fact, there's one of the spiritual sons of the great practitioner called Drom Tompa. When they asked him, you know, like, what is meditation? He says, anything that goes against the worldly view, that's Dharma. Then he goes, anything that tries, if you try to block or hinder or to transform or change a disturbing emotion, that's Dharma. Susie, I can see you thinking about this. It's good. Yeah. Like I say, you want to find, there are different texts that. There's a text by what they call the Kadampa Masters. I really like these texts because they're so straightforward, straight spoken. These were not, they were monks, but they came out of villages. They're very down to earth. You know? So when you read, the books are made up of just questions. And the questions, the answers are so hard-hitting and down-to-earth, you know. And you always get a shock as you realize how much you're not practicing Dharma. You thought you were, and you weren't. And if this happens to you, please don't get discouraged. Actually be quite joyful. It's a wonderful thing to discover your mistakes as early as possible. And otherwise, you have the Lama's uncle, Rinpoche, been practicing for ages. He read this text, came across the text of the cave. He said, I realize I have never practiced Dharma at all. It was all about this life. But wow, if he can, if it can happen to him, and then bless him for telling us, because it could certainly happen to us, could it? So once he realized he was not practicing Dharma, of course, then it was like, well, from then on, he started to practice Dharma. So you can make lots of mistakes thinking what Dharma is. So try and be certain in your own mind. Try and find a few ideas. You know, if I'm working against my anger, my aversion, my harsh speech, I'm practicing Dharma. I'm a person who's practicing Dharma. You've taken refuge. That's great. If you're trying to help somebody else with a good intention, that's Dharma. Again, what makes it Dharma is the motivation. And this Dharma is meant to be like, you know, the path that leads to peace. The peace here, of course, is what they mean by the cessation of the mental afflictions. Like you no longer find yourself resentful, depressed, upset, you know, like whatever the qualities you know about, that are quite distressing, you don't particularly like them, that's not going to happen anymore. That's the whole goal of us practicing, right? And one of the ways we can easily accomplish this is to understand how to make daily life actions become Dharma. Like I said, it's really simple. It's the motivation. The motive is the most important part of it. In fact, when I found a notebook of mine yesterday, and in it I've taken some notes, and one of them was a question about the perfections. So something, if you think about the perfection of, you know, generosity, the perfection of ethics, perfection of patience, there are all these different practices. Right? So you might ask, like, what is the perfection of patience? Or what is the perfection of generosity? And the answer is increasing the intention to give. And when that is perfected, it takes you over what they call to the other side, to enlightenment. So it's increasing the intention. And again, this is hard work, because you might find when you do things, you don't even have a conscious intention. You just do them. Right? So this is why it's quite important that, like, when you wake up in the morning, so just set your intention. Set the major big one. And as you go throughout the day, there'll be little activities you can go to. Just reaffirm your intention then. You won't get it all the time, but you'll get it at least some of the time. And that's good. Okay. Now, so what sort of practices that can we do during the day? We're not actually sitting on cushions or studying Dharma, all this sort of stuff. Right? So here are a couple of practices you can do. They're really straightforward and often quite simple. They'll also bring a great sense of joy, might be too high reaching, but it does make you feel good as you go through the day doing this, using your mind like this. So the first one is like sleep. So how can you turn sleep into Dharma, into something that's ethical? The sleep is basically neutral. But if you become positive, depend upon your intention to sleep, or negative, depending upon your intention to sleep. So what intention could we bring to sleep? That's the question. Now, there are many, many different ones. And so I don't know if you guys have this book or not, but if not, see if you can. There's a book here called Making Life Meaningful. It's a free book. They're up there. What you'll find in this book is the practice of the 35 Buddhas, frustrations, which is going to come up in this 8 weeks. But there's a whole section here on, what's it called? Thought Training Meditations, Appendix 2. There's another one up in further on. So like sitting, walking, sleeping, turning off the light, going to the toilet, all these can be dharma. Of course, if you ask yourself, what? Why do you go to, oh, so it's probably a bit, so what are you going to learn? We want to get rid of something, basically, don't we? Eh? There's something that's like, we go to the room, we've got either excrete or urine. Right? So that's what, that's our normal, that's the worldly way of going to the loo. Right? Everybody, you ask them, do like that, you know. That's it, isn't it?
Yeah, we.
That's right. In fact, yeah, with a fellow like that now. Yeah. So it's like, when we go, as you see in the toilets here, those all those little signs, that's the way to turn something was ordinary as going to the toilet into a Dharma practice. You can do, like I said, sleep, turning on a light, makes no difference. And if, so when I first began, I used to write it out, you know. I'd write out one of the thought, and I put it, when I go to do my teeth, when you look in the mirror, you go to have a shower underneath the light bulb, sorry, underneath the light switch, you just find the little places and go, you know, I don't, normally I don't even think about what I'm going to do. But I know that when I turn off the lights, which the lights are going to go off, that's why I'm turning the lights off, right? The motive is for darkness. But so what if you turn it off and said, by turning these lights, may this happen? Well, I'm turning off the lights to turn off the lights of samsara. Yeah. Some simple little thing.
Cleaning is a
great one.
Cleaning, so it's always cleaning out the dirt from your mind.
Yeah. So sleep. So here, you might come up with different terms. You might not be familiar with. So sleep, like I said, is like when you go to sleep, right, the mind sort of like calms down. Right? Like all the stuff, it's not there anymore. So this is like the mind of a Buddha. All conceptions are not there. Buddhas don't have conceptions and ideas. There's no need for that. They see directly. So just like you close your eyes, you shut off all the appearances of the world. Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm going to shut off all the appearances of Dharmakaya, the mind of the mind. Just as I'm doing this, may this produce that. So you're trying to bring yourself into becoming enlightened for the benefit of others. Well, by doing this, may this take place. My motivation for turning off the lights is not to darken the room, but to free all beings from wrong conceptions. And no wrong conceptions appear. Right? So Dharmakaya, this one. Before sleeping, you see this one here. May all seeing beings realize the dreamlike nature of things. So this relates also what they call the Sambhogakaya. So this is an enlightened body of a being. So like when you dream, right, you see images, don't you? Images appear. Right? They're not real, are they? I mean, in fact, you can. One of the things I remember doing this, right, dreaming that I come up against the wall, and it was something I thought, if this is a real wall, I can't punch my way through. But if it's a dream wall, I can. And I said, bang, like that, my hand went straight through. And I go, now I know I'm dreaming. But so those appearances, you can just put your hands through like that, a dream wall, dream mountains. Yeah. Just like Sambhogakaya appearing. Right? So when we do our visualizations of the Buddhas with all the great lights and all these lovely ornaments, like they're not physical, eh? You can go like that, put your hand right through them. That's how you like it. Use a dream to remind yourself of this other enlightened bodily state. Mind you, it's only one thing, because you can do lots of things with this again and again. So often what I do is try and change these. I'll change them over time as you make your progress. So waking up, simple as it. You know, like sleep, it's darkness, isn't it? And like they call the Buddha, the fellow who woke up. And you go, yeah, so you're awake. Yeah. By me waking up, may this, my awakened state awaken all beings. What else was that? What did I do? Oh, practice from the dead. I'll free all beings from their weight of suffering. And of course, I'll help all beings attain the four models of the Buddha. You hop off and you walk on the floor, then you can bring. If some of these things that I've said you don't understand them, it's okay, you can substitute. So that's why I quite like to read quite a lot of these thought transformation texts. Lama Rinpoche has to say it one way, another Lama will say this, someone else will say this, and I pull out books and here it is again. You find the ones that really resonate with you, go, that's what I'll use. Like I said, so you know, whenever we set up the chairs, I love setting up the chairs. Each time I move out a chair, you can just say, oh, this is a throne of enlightenment that I'm preparing for all beings to sit upon. You know? So work becomes quite easy going. Yeah, especially if you apply this to cooking and cleaning at home, man, it's like, wow, you're really making progress here. And it's not the act, it's the intention. The intention is really, really important. Okay, so just a short meditation now, and we'll just see how we go. Okay, just get comfortable in your seat. Okay, so sometime this evening, you'll be at home and you will have your dinner. What type of motivation could you bring to eating your food to make it a Dharma activity? And after having your dinner and before going to bed, you'll most likely clean your teeth. What type of motivation could you bring to that to transform ordinary scrubbing of the teeth into a Dharma activity? Now, if you wash your teeth and you're about to go to bed, you'll walk to the bedroom probably. So how could you transform the act of walking into a Dharma activity? So remember, it just depends upon your motivation. Find a good motive. Then you'll hop into bed and you'll pull the covers up. Think of something that might be a virtuous thought. Or perhaps you could say, by covering myself with these blankets, may I cover all beings with the perfection of patience. And now you're about to fall asleep. What motivation could you bring to your sleep to make this a virtuous activity? Now, whenever you come up with thoughts that support your Dharma, like this, make the activity Dharma. Imagine the golden light fills your body. And sort of goes out through the pores of your skin. And then see yourself doing the activity within that sphere of golden light, or having these thoughts within that sphere of golden light. And now I'm just breathing in between those, exhaling the breath. Get your eyes flooded open.
Susan shared a lovely little gata or thought transformation. Cleaning the teeth, washing the face, may all sentient beings have pure speech.
Excellent. That's right, that's the last one. Yeah. Yeah, so try to make them sort of simple and relevant to yourself. If you don't know about this Dharma Kaya, Sambhava Kaya, all these other funny words, just put that idea aside and find something more practical that will actually work for you. Okay, so now we're going to have a talk about this practice called purifying the speech. And I think on the slide here, it just goes through the different stages. So you start off with an emptiness meditation. I'll lead you guys through that one, through one here shortly. There are different ways of doing this. You can do it really quickly, and you can do it a little bit more slowly. If you know how to do it slowly, then you can move. It's better learn slow and then go quick. It's quite straightforward. You're not fooling yourself. So you do the emptiness meditation, then you arise as the deity or with a body of light. Now, you might not have what's called your deity. Right? So your deity is referring to, if you've had a tantric initiation and been introduced into the tantras, and you've adopted that deity, there's your deity. Right? So in other words, if a teacher came here and gave a Tara retreat or a Manjushri or a Chedwas or whatever, and you were there and you took it, you could arise as the deity here. Now, if this has not happened for you, you can do it using the Buddha. It's the only exception. So you don't need to have an initiation. You can do it as the Buddha. In other words, saying, you can do this emptiness meditation, arise as Buddha. And you just go, I'm fully enlightened being, in other words. So you accomplish that, and then a syllable will appear just above your mouth, and it will turn into this white moon disc. So imagine that you're standing there like this. Inside your mouth, there's a little symbol of light, and then it turns into a white moon disc that lays just above the table on your table. And on that will be like this white, another little white symbol on the white moon disc. And then these little circles of Sanskrit letters. So the first one is white, the second is red, and the third, they're called Dharani, or heart mantra dependent arising, is blue. So in other words, you've got a little white moon disc, or like a little tablet on the tongue. There's a little white symbol pumping up. Round is white letters, then red letters, then blue letters, and all the same inside your mouth on the tongue. Then light beams go up from these letters, go up, filling up all the directions of space. They hook back all the blessings and power of speech of the enlightened beings, the unenlightened being. Anyone who's got powerful speech, draw it back into these syllables on your tongue. Then you recite the mantras three times that go with each of these letters. So like in other words, when you get the white Sanskrit vows, you're going to say this thing three times. With the red, you say it three times. With the blue, you say it three times. There's a visualization that comes with it. Then everything comes back. So like you go out, you send everything out, and then it all comes back in. So then finally, the blue will go back into the red. The red will go into the white. The white will go into that symbol up like that. That'll drop down as the moon disk. Then the moon disk will flip around, dissolve into your tongue. and you have all the blessings. This is a normal way of things like going out, coming back. It's a bit like, in fact, I think it was, now it's the same in terms of the sutra path, isn't it? So you do something, and effect follows, cause and effect. So here, as the deity comes out, cause, and the effect comes in. So there's many benefits for doing this. The first is that Amasloka Rinpoche says your speech becomes perfect. Whatever you recite is multiplied 10 million times, that's a lot. Or your speech becomes a recitation of mantra, even gossiping. And this power of this, which can't be taken away now, often by eating what they call wrong foods, or particular foods, especially in the lower tantras. We've got stuff about what you can eat. And so in there, they sort of don't eat garlic, don't do this, don't do that in terms of your diet. You do, yeah, those they often say that tantras do not smoke cigarettes or dope, anything in fact, because it's going to clog up all those very fine channels inside the body with the mind and moves from a tantric perspective. Okay, so let's do this thing. And of course, over time, it doesn't have more and more questions, right? And that's fine. So then I could see here, we could do the emptiness meditation first, and then we'll take you through the phenomenon. When we do the emptiness meditation, like there's ways, there's one way of doing it like in sutra, and there's another way of doing it in tantra. I mean, the effects are a little bit different. So, you know, you can realize emptiness and just recognize the lack of inheritance and the dependent arising nature. So when we do emptiness meditation, it's not like there's nothing. Right? You always go, this does not exist, therefore it follows that this exists. Because it follows inherent existence does not exist. It is empty of any form of existence. But why? Because it dependently exists. So on this side, what it's not, ultimate truth. On this side, what it is, conventional truth. It's not nothing. We're just going, it doesn't exist like that. It exists like this. That's what we do with emptiness. Okay? It's never nothing. In Tantra, you do that as you would in Sutra, it's just that. In Sutra, you just basically leave it alone and stop right there. That's it. The phenomenon is empty. In Tantra, which is what this is about, that realization, that understanding of the empty, that's a mind. Your mind knows that, doesn't it? It's the only place it's saying you know where there is. It's your mind, right? So your mind knows this thing. It's not like that, it's like this. Now that mind itself arises as the deity. It's not your normal body and mind that's doing it. But it's that knowledge, that mind that knows that's called, it's a body of knowledge. It knows something. That, and they take that. And that becomes the body of the deity. Because that's the empty. So you arise now as this deity. Like I'm saying, if you haven't had a tantric initiation, you can do Shakyamuni Buddha. So just arise as some sort of the golden, as best you can. The idea is to feel, wow, like I'm enlightened. I'm enlightened, big, I'm a deity. I can help anybody. I can help everybody. So your body here is light, which represents emptiness. That's why I've got so many figures of light in Buddhism. It's not because they are light. It's the most closest thing. Light and space is the closest thing you can get to emptiness. But for instance, light is a dependent arising, isn't it? It depends upon a whole lot of factors. So it begins to be a dependent arising, it's empty. And so again, if you find this difficult, then this arises the best version of yourself. Just think like I don't get this. If you think I don't get the stage, you think I'm not quite sure what I'm doing, but just like I'm a really good person at this stage. You just hold that, and then you go, and on my tongue is this and that. But you don't arise like this, right? Because these aggregates, they're all contaminated, right? We're in this situation with this body we're in through ignorance. So we're not converting this solid body and so forth. We're converting it. What we're getting is our knowledge and having it appear as something wonderful. It's our body, because that's who I am. So it is the case, isn't it? Many of us will think, I am the body, I am this, I am that. Whether it's a thought, I'm really smart, I'm really fat. So one's a thought and one's a, well, they're both thoughts, aren't they? One's related to the physical and one's related to the mental. So here when you do this thing, you've got to go, whoa, empty, there's nothing there. There's nothing to see, to grab. That itself is the body of knowledge. The complete absence, and then you take that and I appear as the deity. Now, the deities appear in all sorts of different ways. Have yourself appear that way. Anything difficult here I've put on? I must have done. Is there anything you're unsure of or you want to raise a question? let's do the emptiness meditation. Then we'll take, I'll do, we'll just run through this last bit, and then next week we'll actually do it, just to give you a better idea. We're all in the seat, so if you like this, if you want to, you can close your eyes, but just get comfortable. So who is sitting on your seat? You can say, well, I am. You are. I. Is the collection of the body and mind also on that seat? Yes, they are. Are you naturally established to be one and the same as the collection of the body and mind on that seat? In other words, are you the same as the body and mind on the seat? Now, your answer should be no. Why? Why are you not one and the same as the body and mind on the seat? Your answer is, because the collection of the body and mind are the basis for the imputation of identity. And your identity, it's me or I, is imputed to that basis. The I, your I, your me, your identity is a mere name that's put onto the body and mind. That's why you're not the body and mind. Now, if you were to suddenly remove yourself from that chair and go off to the bathroom, what's not on the chair? There are two things that are not on the chair, right? The body, because it's gone off to the toilet, and you. You're not on the chair. That chair is empty of a truly established person. You're empty because you're not on the chair. If you had a real identity, intrinsic nature, separate from the body and mind, you'd be on the chair, but you're not. That shows you're empty. Of any intrinsic nature. So take this absence of I, just sort of feel it, that's not there. So let the absence of an I now take the form of a deity, a being of light, the embodiment of wisdom, compassion, and skill, and say, this is me, this is who I am. And on my tongue is a syllable A. Little letter A. That's similar to a word. And then have that transform now into a white moon disc that's lying flat upon your toe. And then have on that moon disc a larger appearing letter A. Ah. Okay, now I'm just going to, I want you to breathe in now through your nostrils and just exhale and just let that visualization go and just bring your attention back to the class. I just want to ask you a couple of questions. So I know this meditation on emptiness, it's probably not familiar to you, nor is the language familiar to you. But if it is, hopefully some sort of experience arises. And whether it does or not, the idea is you've got to come up as a deity, a being of light. Like why, you could ask. So you don't clutch at your body and grasp at your body as being real. And this is it. And so stops the grasping at a real me and a real body. Because when it comes to die, that's what we're going to grasp at. Huh? And you've got to understand, there is no real me, a real body like that. Never was, never will be. But it appears that way. It always appears that way, but it doesn't exist in reality. And this, the idea is to stop clinging the attachment to body-mind ideas. So we do that. When we do the sweet blessing, that little, you know, when we start off, okay, now you're a deity, and you get this little syllable, ah, that appears in space above your tongue. That's the most important letter in the whole Sanskrit alphabet. It's that little A is what they call a negation. So if you say something like, so if I say, I'm really happy, and then you put that little ah before it, makes it, you are not happy. That little A is a negation of whatever the first word is, it negates it. So it's to let you know, remember, this is all empty. Everything that's coming out of emptiness, everything is a dependent arising. You know, when you do these things, what happens is, again, the mind reifies in your grasp. And like I am a deity, you know, really, you know, is it really? You know, it's dependent. So that little A represents dependent arising and emptiness. Because remember, it changes into a moon disk. So A represents emptiness, the moon, form. Emptiness is form. Form is emptiness. But again, it's just all these ways of reminding you again and again, look, it's all empty, it's all empty, it's all dependent. It's all dependent and empty. So when it turns into the moon disk, of course, now the moon disk, of course, is bodhicitta. And you have the bodhicitta, and then up on top of it comes the bigger A, which is like the R, because this has to do with speech, purifying speech. So this next letter, R, represents the purified speech that you wish to accomplish. Then around it, there's a white moon disk like that. Then there's this art that looks like that. But again, if you put an English letter up there, it doesn't really matter at this stage. The ideas that matter and getting used to them. So we have this syllable om appears, and then the letters appear. So the first, as you can see just slightly there, that these are all what they call the white, the vowels in the Sanskrit alphabet. So you have all the white vowels. Then you have all the red consonants, and then you have the blue mantra of dependent arising. So again, just to remind you, dependent arising and emptiness. Everything that exists is a dependent arising, and therefore it's empty of inherent nature. So you have these, then these will send out all the light rays. So they send out blue light rays, red light rays, white light rays. And then they go out and they draw back what they call these different great qualities. So they're the seven signs of the king's rule, the eight auspicious signs, the eight auspicious medicines. So you've got all these little pictures. So these pictures represent all these qualities. We see in Tantra, we can hear how often objects are used to represent spiritual ideas. Like, you know, when we look at the Buddha, you look up there, I mean, most of it just seems like a big drum of gold. Of course, that's what appears to the mind, to the eye, sorry, but you know, like what's meant to appear to the mind when you look at the Buddha? You know, all the qualities. But I'm sure for most of us, that's not it. It just looks gold statue. That represents something else. It's the same here. You know, it's all representation, symbols. And you know, the wall comes down, all rains down. You say it, then the red ones, then the blue ones, and then they all come back. See? The pendant horizon goes into the consonants goes into the vowels. The vowels goes into the form. And that will go in there and it will transform and your tongue becomes this, like a vajra. And vajra. And then finishes. And then you dedicate. You know, may my tongue sense space have all the current of the once called to bliss. By the magnificence and power of my words, may all sacred beings be subdued, may all the meanings of whatever words I say be accomplished. So this something that I do every day, and I do it especially for doing classes, especially when it comes to, if you've got something that's going to be difficult about a conversation, please do this, like purify your speech, right? For most of us, I'm sure, we don't hurt people with our hands. So in other words, we don't kill them, we don't punch them, we don't hit them, we don't steal from them. We're not engaged in many partners in sexual misconduct, right? That's not really our problems. We don't do that. But we do the stuff with speech, don't we? We harm most people with our speech, I'm sure. Now this is about clearing that stuff up. That was just like a quick overview of it. It really doesn't take long. Like I said, now that I've memorized, it's very easy. I can wake up in the morning and go, wow, thank God I'm alive. And I do thank God. I think all the things that come about, I'm still alive. You say, okay, now you can just do the practice from the bed. And then after that, everything you say, every time you use the speech, man, the merit's incredible. So you can, as we go through these 8 weeks, I'll show you how different ways you can practice this, if you choose to. Okay, I know it's about midday right now. Is there anything you guys would finally like to ask?
So with that last meditation, before you're leaving, you just have a printed, like a guide for that.
Yes. Yes, we do. And this meditation with the guides, we have them in
they're in the golden prayer books as well.
In the golden prayer books as well as something like this, the method to transform suffering life into happiness. Yeah, and just so it's a speech blessing. And of course, what they often do is try to tie it up with something else as well. But you can just do this like from the bed. Like, you get used to it, it's quite straightforward.
I definitely like that idea. Doing that if you're preparing for a difficult conversation.
Oh, sure.
That's something that can give you a little bit of confidence going into that.
Yeah, yes, that's right. And like I say, Mickey and I was thinking perhaps it's a terrific method for any Dharma teachers, like purify your speech first before you teach, in a sense. But I also think it's fantastic at home, even if you're not a teacher, because most of our activity surely has been speaking to others, isn't it? Like I say, we don't normally harmful without in our body. So there's three of body, killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, and not, that's not really our prop thing, is it? We've got speech and we've got the mind. So here we can use this. We can use this for the speech, but I've also learned that I've seen other texts where they do the whole mind. So here they do the whole thing at the heart. They put the whole visualization takes place at the heart. And it goes out. And so you go, ah, now you're the major thing here is the mind. Anyway, folks, that's it for today. This is sort of useful for you. What's your takeaway? So you know what Dharma is, right? Is that which holds you back from suffering? That's what the Dharma is meant to do. Or so somewhere like going against the afflictions. That's what Dharma is, its functioning purposes. If you're not doing that, do you check? Right? If you want to practice Dharma, just check. While working against the afflictions, have I got this good concerned motivation to help others, thereby protecting myself from suffering? So that, and then try to find some simple, like just find one thing at home. Like maybe it's just like walking, you know, like as simple as that, like walking is the path. Like every time you get up to walk somewhere, may I create the path, may this be the means to create a path for all sentient beings leading into enlightenment. That's too long, make it shorter. Just make it snappy so you can quickly, like every time I do this, make it a new habit. Once you get one and you say, wow, I'm doing that really all the time, then take another one. Like I said, for me, it's you know, when you want a really simple one, just washing your face, isn't it? It's just like you want to wash away all the delusions. So through this activity of washing the face, by washing away the illusions of all sentient beings by becoming enlightened. So always add that, but you know, by becoming enlightened if you can, because it's for yourself and everyone. So over each week we'll be doing the speech one, that way we'll get some familiarity with it. But the other ones, I'll give you something each week and just try and find one thing that you can do. So next week we'll look about what we call preparing the space, but it's a bit more of showing, I think next week's more about sort of showing how you can practice Dharma during the day and during the night. And Lama's open up to show you suggestions of how to do this. So, well, I've really enjoyed being back with you because I love talking to you during this material. So, but really thank you for being here. And let's dedicate our material. So, YouTube. Due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings, without exception, into their enlightened state. Next. May the supreme dual body teacher, not yet born, arise in the world. May that born have no decline but increase forevermore. And as long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, may I too remain to dispel the sorrows of the world. And for the quick discovery and return of Buddhism. In holding and spreading the Muni's precious and complete teachings through explanation and practice, you wore the armor of patience that was never discouraged. Incomparable, they were good to you and make this request. And lastly, the prayer for the long life of His Holiness, the Dalai. The wish granting, wish fulfilling will, source of every single benefit and happiness of this world, to the incomparably kind Tenzin Gyatso, I beseech, may all your holy wishes be spontaneously fulfilled.